come onto that in more detail. Other thoughts? Yeah, stops you thinking. Yeah, Ariella. Yeah. So too much information stops you thinking. Some information is bad. Too much information can overwhelm you. Lots of different things we're already starting to see. We live in a world that is so full of information. A study was done 8 years ago now, and the study showed that every day, 3.6 trillion words were churned out on social media / email. That is the equivalent of 36 million books. That is more books than is in the Bodleian Library. And that's every single day. And that's 8 years ago, before the invention of AI, or the meaningful kind of invention of AI that we can all have access to. I don't know what that number would be now, but it would be way higher. That is the volume of information that we are pumping out. Here's the question we're going to be thinking about today. Amidst that sea of information, how do we value what really matters? And we're going to think about three different things to value. Here's the first. Value truth over falsehood. Just picking up on what Ariella said, some information is bad or false. Value truth over falsehood. One of the underrated Christian skills is discernment. That is the value of the ability to work out what is true and what is false, what is good and what is bad, what is beautiful and what is not beautiful. Our world talks and has talked for years about this issue of fake news. The Bible has kind of always dealt with that issue. Fake gospels, fake versions of the good news have been around ever since the Bible was written. There's some words from 2 Timothy chapter 4. These are words that Paul wrote to Timothy a couple of thousand years ago. Let me read them. For the time will come, Paul says, when people will not put up with sound doctrine. Instead, to suit their own desires, they will gather around them a great number of teachers to say what their itching ears want to hear. They will turn their ears away from the truth. Look a few things out from that verse. There's a time, Paul says, where people will not put up with sound doctrine. They will no longer want to think about what's true. They will want to put that to one side, and instead, because it suits their own desires better, because it's what they like and want to hear, they will gather around themselves teachers saying what they want to hear. But not just some teachers, a great number of teachers. There will be many people who are very happy to say things that are false so that they can get a hearing, and there will be many people who want to hear what's false because it makes them feel better. And we live in a world where that is easier than ever. It is easier than ever to surround ourselves or be surrounded unwittingly by those who say what our ears want to hear. Because there is so much more information out there, but also because we have so much more access than we ever did to the breadth of what there is out there. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So Glenn is saying, just put that up for recording or anyone who didn't hear, that's exactly the problem with an algorithms. The way the algorithms work is they work out what you like and they give you more and more of it. And to state the obvious, algorithms can't be trusted with doctrine. Like, algorithms can't work out what is true and not true. That's just not a skill they have. Let me give you an example of that. 2020, we were watching church online. This was back at our church in London when we were there. Because of COVID, you know, church wasn't gathering. So we watched church on YouTube, and autoplay was on YouTube at this point. Church finishes, and it immediately says, playing next, and it was a Catholic church service in South Africa. And you went, you really don't get it, do you, YouTube? Like, you don't know what I actually want next. YouTube cannot be trusted with sound doctrine. And similarly, just because something's popular doesn't make it trustworthy. Just because something's popular doesn't make it trustworthy. This verse shows us that what is popular, for a number of people at least, is what their itching ears want to hear, not what is necessarily true. And some of the dynamics in our kind of technological age is that what shocks sells. That's basically how the internet works. What shocks sells. And so things that are provocative and things with kind of catchy titles and things that are kind of shocking to the ears and provoke controversy, those are the things that get loads of popularity online. And so popularity has no link to trustworthiness. Just because it's popular doesn't make it true. And then we have one of the other problems with discerning what's true online. And that is, the Bible gives us a couple of different ways to work out, particularly when it comes to Christian truth and false teaching, how to work out what's true. One of them is as we weigh it against what the scriptures say, and the other is as we look at the character of the teacher. So the Bible makes a really big thing of the character of the teachers you're to have in your churches, and it also makes a really big thing of the ungodly character of false teachers. The problem with the internet is that you have absolutely no idea what the character of the person through the screen is. You don't see their life. And so there's a real danger in thinking, I'm going to get what I trust from the internet, because you have no idea really who the person is that's putting that information across. And so we need to value truth over falsehood. There's a few different ways to do that. One of them is to try and break the algorithms, to mess with the algorithms. And by that, what I mean is, don't let them force you into an echo chamber. So the way the algorithms work is, you like, okay, let's go political and let's assume a certain person for this. You like kind of right-wing stuff, so I'm going to give you more and more and more right-wing stuff. Actually, part of ensuring that you're getting a balance and you're not being forced into an echo chamber is to actively seek out views that maybe you don't agree with. And the same would work in reverse. That will look like being quite intentional about the kind of places you go for your news. Don't just go to one type of place. Don't just go to one platform. Stretch it out. You can see in all kinds of ways the way this kind of thing happens and how, depending what news source you look at, you see their biases. Try and make sure you know their biases and stretch across it. So this is the kind of thing I find interesting. Last week, there was a report from the International Monetary Fund, and you're all starting to fall asleep. That's fine. About the different economies in the G7. Here's what you need to know. Basically nothing in that. But what you need to know is that the Telegraph, generally anti-Labour, what do they report? UK to have worse living standards in the G7. There's the big headline. What is the BBC, more sympathetic to Labour at least than the Telegraph is, UK to have second highest growth in the G7. It's the exact same report, and they're both true statements. They just pick the bits of the report that they think their readers want to hear. And so we need to be aware of that, and that is true with things kind of politically, it's all, and news more generally. It's also true with kind of Christian stuff that we consume online, Christian content. Different places will have different emphases, and we need to make sure that we are not falling captive to a particular emphasis because we're only going one place and we're letting the algorithms drive us further into that echo chamber. So think about where you're consuming information from and branch it out. And as you do that, evaluate critically, and I don't mean that as in be willing to criticize, but evaluate carefully, weigh it against scripture. What's actually being said? Is it true? Is it not? Value truth over falsehood. There's our first thing. Here's our second, and this is by far our longest one of the three. Value transformation over information. If you want one thing to take away from this session, it's that. Value transformation over information. There are loads of problems that come with being over-informed. We're going to think about three problems and three solutions. Here's the first problem. Information becomes the end, not a means. And by that, what I mean is, we've got to the point where we think the only point of knowledge is to know something in itself. That, like, knowledge in and of itself is the end point. So, like, I don't know if you ever had this, maybe you're going to meet with a friend, and you think, before I see that friend, I should probably check BBC News or BBC Sport, depending on what kind of friend it is, just to check nothing major has happened in the world, because I don't want to get there and then be like, oh, do you know about this? And you're like, oh, no, I don't. Because we feel like the point of knowledge is just to know something. Knowledge has become an end. That's not how it's meant to be. Neil Postman, we've talked about him a bit in the series before. He's a media critic, predominantly in the 80s. He wrote this in the 80s. The tie between information and action has been severed. Elsewhere, he talks about the information-action ratio. That is the kind of proportion of stuff you know to what you actually do about it. And his point, and I think it's right, is that we were made as creatures to do something with what we know. That generally speaking, you know something and that should lead to some form of action. And one of the problems with being over-informed is that becomes impossible because we cannot frankly do something about most of the stuff we hear about. When information becomes the end, not the means, and we no longer think about action, we just end up being informed and informed and informed. And that's a problem in lots of ways. And one of them is in how we approach scripture. Let me read a couple of verses from Romans chapter 12. They're on your handouts. Paul in Romans 12, "Therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your body as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind." Paul has just spent the first 11 chapters of the book of Romans basically expounding God's mercy. And then at the beginning of chapter 12, he says, therefore, in the light of all of that, do some stuff. And chapters 12, 16 are kind of the response. If you slightly oversimplistic, but if chapters 1 to 11 of Romans are the information, chapters 12 to 16 are the action. Information should lead to action. Paul says that is always the way it should work as a Christian. But if we get very used to just absorbing information for information's sake, we end up, or can end up, taking that approach with reading our Bibles, as if the aim of Bible reading is just to know some more Bible trivia, that that's sufficient, that I know some more, I'm guaranteed to live better. It doesn't work like that. If we just think it's about absorbing information, it's not that simple. If information is the end in itself, it will not transform us. Information shouldn't become an end, it should be a means. But in an overinformed world, we struggle to live that out. That's the first problem with being overinformed. Here's the second, and it's linked, and it was what I think your table said. Information overwhelms us. C.S. Lewis in 1946. "I doubt if it is the duty of any private person to fix his or her mind on ills which he or she cannot help. A great many people do now seem to think that the mere state of being worried is itself meritorious." I don't think it is, says Lewis. It's so prescient. 80 years ago, he is basically starting to see the problems that are going to develop more, and that is so true of our world today. That we think it is our kind of moral obligation to know about every ill in the world, even when we can't do anything about it. And that just by being sad and worried about something that's happening somewhere else in the world that we can do nothing about, that that's somehow a good thing in itself. And the danger with that, Lewis says, is that we just will end up building worry upon worry upon worry, and we will be utterly overwhelmed by a whole bunch of information that we can do nothing about. And our world kind of propagates this mindset. So the assumption is, you ought to care. I can't believe you don't care about that. And you see it in all kinds of things. You know, a terror attack or a war starts somewhere else in the world, and I have to show that I care. And so I have to, I don't know, change my Facebook profile picture to have a little flag, or I have to hang a flag outside of my house, or whatever it is. And those may or may not be right or wrong, so I'm not saying that those are inherently wrong things to do. But there's an assumed pressure that I ought to show that I care, that I'm aware of this issue and that I care about it. And if you take on all the world's ills on yourself, you can't be anything other than overwhelmed, because you can't actually do anything to help with it. We as humans were not made to know everything. And so we need to appreciate our limits and to be okay with not knowing stuff. Because if we know stuff that we can't do anything to help, in Lewis's words, all we can do is worry. Little asterisk, as a Christian, we can also pray and give those things over to the Lord. And that is good, and let's do that. And again, maybe prayer shouldn't be a little asterisk. But you know what I mean. But if we just absorb all of these problems and we can't do anything to help with them, we will be utterly overwhelmed. Here's the third thing. Third problem. Information is quickly gained and quickly lost. Tony Renke, who writes a lot on tech as a Christian, he wrote this. "Life online is a whiplash between deep sorrow, unexpected joy, cheap laughs, profound thoughts, and dumb memes." And we all know it's true if we spend any time online. You scroll through a news feed, and what do you get? You get a bit of information about one of your friends who, I don't know, their child has really tragically died. And then the next thing you see is a kind of video that Facebook feeds you of whatever it is that you're interested in. And then the next thing you see is someone celebrating their wedding. And then the next thing you see is some hilarious meme that someone's put up. And then and you've absorbed all of that in about 30 seconds, and really you've actually absorbed none of it. And I love the way that Ranke describes it as whiplash, because you're constantly thrown from thing to thing to thing, and you just don't know how to process it all, and you don't respond rightly to it. And information that is quickly gained is nearly always quickly lost. There's a brilliant song by a comedian called Bo Burnham called Welcome to the Internet. We're not going to play it because it's horrifically crude. So I say it's a brilliant song. It's brilliantly incisive, up to your consciences, whether you want to go and look at it later. I'm not recommending it one way or another. What I am going to tell you is he really, really understands the dynamic of the internet. Here the chorus goes, can I offer you everything all of the time? A little bit of everything all of the time. And that's the thing with the internet. It kind of bounces from thing to thing to thing. So you can have this, and you can have this, and you can have this, and you can have this. And when we're just swamped with that volume of information, we really don't take any of it on board. And we don't respond rightly to any of it because we're just taking on so much. And whereas information is quickly gained and therefore quickly lost, wisdom is not quickly gained. Last week, we didn't actually have very much time to touch on this verse, but in Ecclesiastes 7, the teacher says, I turned my mind to understand, to investigate, and to search out wisdom. What that verse shows us is it doesn't come naturally and it doesn't come easily. He had to turn his mind to understand. He had to investigate. He had to search it out. This internet world of loads of information at your fingertips doesn't necessarily offer you any wisdom. Proverbs 4, similar point. The beginning of wisdom is this, get wisdom. Though it costs you all you have, get understanding. It's going to be costly to get wisdom. It doesn't just come easy. Information online will, but wisdom won't. And so Andy Crouch summarizes it like this. Knowledge these days is very easy to come by, but you can't search for wisdom, at least not online. That's not to say there is no wisdom out there on the internet. That's not his point. But his point is that the way that the online media works, it's not the best way to go about seeking wisdom because it doesn't always put up front and easily accessible what is true, what is good, what is beautiful, and what is time-tested. Instead, it puts up cheap information that is quickly gained and quickly lost. Three problems, three solutions, the first of which we're going to spend much more time on than the last two. Solution number one, slow down. Slow down. The way online stuff is written doesn't help you to read it well. So one of the ways you see that is the amount of hyperlinks. And you kind of, I don't know if you ever find this, you're reading one article, you get a couple of paragraphs down, you spot a hyperlink and you click on that, and then you read a couple of paragraphs of that one, and then you click another hyperlink and a couple of paragraphs of the next one. You've really actually read nothing because you're not really actually sat through any amount of detail engaging with the issue. You've just read loads of little snippets. That kind of reading, that kind of flicking from thing to thing to thing type reading, doesn't actually help us gain wisdom. And the kind of information we learn, we very, very quickly lose. So slow down your consumption of information. Here's one way to do that. Generally speaking, try and read physical things. There are some people for whom that's harder, I recognize that. But here's why, scientifically proven, it's better for you. They did a test, and the test went like this. The two groups of people were given the same bit of information, kind of text, and then some questions to answer at the end. When these two control groups were given this, one of them was given it online, one was given it in paper, and they both had exactly the same amount of time to finish it, and they had to stay there for the whole time. The results were basically identical. They then repeated the experiment, and they took away the time limit. They said, whenever you think you've read it, you can answer the questions. Those who read online finished way faster and got a way lower score. Why is that? Because our brain tricks us into thinking that we can read stuff on a screen way quicker than we can actually take in information. And that is just the way the data proves it works. That is in part because a lot of people read on screens in this the way they've termed it is Zed reading. Have you ever heard that phrase? Zed reading works like this. I think as I describe it, at least I was like, oh yeah, I do this, so I'm assuming others do as well. bit of text on a screen, you read the first couple of lines properly, and then you kind of go through the paragraph and then read the last line properly. Do we all do that? Enough of us do. There's enough nods. That is, generally speaking, how people read online. And then they scroll up on the phone, and then they go, read, read, read. And that's how we basically approach most text on screens. And the data shows that's how it works. And so we read it quickly, but we don't necessarily take in the information. And so, generally speaking, where we can, it is good to read things in physical form. Kindle's somewhere in between the two. So I will print stuff out. If I'm going to read a longer article online, I will print out the article. You might tell me I'm killing the planet. I recognize that's a downside. But if it's something I actually want to meaningfully engage with, I will engage with it much better. So maybe that's something you want to do, engage with things physically more. Another way to slow down is, what speed do you listen to podcasts at? Because one of the problems with putting podcasts on higher speed, and I'm not saying there is a right speed, people are different, we take in information at different speeds, some of us will need it at 0.5, some of us will be happy at 1.5, that's fine. But the question is, have you listened to it in such a way, at such a speed, that you've actually given the information time to get to your heart? What that number is will be different for us, but the question is, have you actually given it enough time for that information to get to your heart? Have you given yourself space for that information to actually transform you, or is it just more things in your head that will quite quickly therefore go out of your head? Here's another very practical thing I've done with podcasts in the last 2 weeks since I started prepping this. I listen to loads of them. I listen to them when I'm driving. I listen to them when I'm running. Here's what I've tried to do. When I finish one, before it immediately rolls into another, I just hit pause and I stop. I think, what's the one thing I want to pray in the light of this podcast? And then I do that, I pray, and then I press play again and off I go. That might not be the thing you think is best for you, but that's one way I'm just trying to embody, slow down, don't just absorb information, actually what is a response to this information look like? Slow down. Because I think we can, and I say this very tentatively, I think we can listen to too much good content. And by that I mean, we can run the risk of becoming a bit like the Pharisee in Luke 18. You know, the Pharisee in Luke 18, you know, I fast this many times a day or week, whatever. I think there's a danger we think, I listen to this many sermons a week, I listen to this number of hours of Christian content a week, as if that is in and of itself a good. It is a good if it's transforming you. But are you so quick to get to put the next thing on that you haven't actually let the thing you've listened to sink down and transform you? Slow down. Tony Renke says this, to skim the Bible is to misread it. And his point in saying that is, if you skim, all you get is information and not transformation. And the Bible is meant to transform you. And so if you've only gone to it for information, you've misread it. Because it's not meant to stop at information. Slow down. Two others, and these are way quicker. Second, prioritize the local. C.S. Lewis, that quote I've already read out, he said, I doubt if it's the duty of any private person to fix his mind on ills which he cannot help. So try and fix your mind on ills you might actually be able to do something about. What's that look like for me? I'm still kind of working this out, but here's a couple of things. Well, here's one thing I've tried to do, and then one thing I think is generally true for all of us. I'm trying to spend as much time now on the Oxfordshire bit of the BBC News website as the top bit of the BBC News website. Because that stuff is realistically, most of the time, actually going to impact my day-to-day life more, and occasionally I might actually have something I can do about it. I'm not saying that's how you should consume news, but I think that helps us to not spend our time being overwhelmed by ills that we cannot actually do anything about. Prioritize the local. Here's something that I think I'm going to go further and say I think we should all be doing, and I'm not saying we're not. Care more about the lives of people in the church, and particularly in your home groups, than you do about the lives of celebrities online or the latest online controversy. You can't do anything about that stuff. You can do something about the person near you who is struggling. You can give yourself to loving them. You can check up on how they're actually doing. Prioritize the local. And third, embrace not knowing stuff. Embrace not knowing stuff. Occasionally around the dinner table? Were we having a conversation? And we'll get to the point where we go, oh, I don't actually know that. One of us will ask a question and none of us know the answer. And my 9-year-old daughter says, why don't you just look it up on the internet? It's normally how that conversation goes. And we're increasingly saying no, because we don't need to know everything. Sometimes part of the fun is just speculating and going, oh, it could be this, it could be this, we're not quite sure, and maybe we'll look it up later. But we're at least going to have a bit of a season of we're reminding ourselves that we don't know everything. And that's really good for us because we're not those who know everything. And it's good to remember that we don't know everything. Embrace not knowing. It reminds us that only God knows everything, and we don't. That's the biggest point. Go on, we're going to go into discussion groups in a moment. But before we do, any questions of clarification or comments or anything at this point before we go into groups? Yeah, so there's a load of research done into the fact that mental health and anxiety issues globally are going like this, and use of smartphones is tracking almost identically. It's a bit of a culture war between certain scientists. I am pretty convinced that there is a pretty tight link, and that, just be really careful what I say. What I am not saying is if any given person struggles with their mental health, it means that they must be overusing technology. But generally, at a societal level, yes, and I think a big part of it is this issue that we're dealing with today. That is, we now have access to so much bad news and so much negative stuff, and because we were made to do something about things that we hear about, and we now can't do stuff about most of the stuff we hear about, that is kind of breaking us as humans in different ways. That thought that we're overwhelmed by negative information, that thought that we constantly are consuming stuff and we can't do anything about it, that information has become a means, an end, not a means. I think that's all part of what's going on. So yes, there is a pretty tight link. There's plausible reasons to see that without it being a kind of one-to-one correspondence for any given person. And I think this is a big part of it. Yeah, the Bible's not there as a kind of trivia book so you can impress your friends. I think I'll admit this is fine. Some of you will play Wordle. I don't know if any of you know, there's a thing called Versal. Guess where the Bible verse is. They give you a verse, you've got to try and work out where it is in the Bible. I do that most days. Actually, I do that every day. Let's not pretend it's not most days. And my current streak is... I grapple with whether that's actually a healthy thing for me. Like, is that making me treat the Bible a bit like trivia? Could be. I think it's okay as long as I'm then turning those things into genuine prayers to the Lord and trying to take that verse on board as part of my daily walk with him. So yeah, I think there's a real danger that we just treat the Bible like a textbook because we treat everything else like a textbook effectively. Isaac. Yeah, so there is lots of good things with memorizing scripture as long as that is not the end in itself. So it's the information is a mean, should be a means, not an end question. So if my aim in memorizing scripture is so that I can say, I've now at 72 verses, how many are you on? That would be unhelpful. And we, you know, our motivations are always mixed and all those kind of things. But if we're going, I'm going to memorize this verse because that will help me when the issue comes, when I'm seeking to honor the Lord, to be able to respond well because I now know what scriptures say about that and it's more embedded in my mind and it's closer to the front of my mind, that's all really good and healthy. And one of the, in a sense, downsides of having more access to scripture is we feel less need to memorize it. But the reality is, in the moment of temptation, you're probably not going to go, oh wait, there's a verse somewhere in the Bible about this, let me just flick through the whole of the scriptures and hope I can quickly find it. So memorization of scripture is a really good thing as long as it isn't the end in itself. Does that answer your question? Jonathan. Yeah, good question. I think it depends what the aim of the share of your you pressing that button is. If you think, I've got some information, I want to show you all what information I now know, probably not a very good decision. If it is, I genuinely think the community with which I'm sharing this bit of information will be helped to know this bit of information, either in the way they can support me better or in the way they can generally respond well, and it is innate, it's giving them information that will lead to an action, that's fine. And that action can be have a bit of a laugh, because not all information is, you know, serious, some of it's genuinely funny. So I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with using a share button, as long as if all you're trying to do is give them information for information's sake, or trying to promote yourself, I'd say those are probably not great reasons to use it. Or, yeah. No, and that's absolutely true. And so we want to then think, so one of the things we're trying to say in this series is don't withdraw from all technology, be aware of its dangers and work out how to use it well, and how to then use it well for the gospel. Certain mediums are better suited to certain types of message, and so we want to think that through carefully and to work out what's the right thing to put on what media. It can be a really good opportunity. It can also just end up being drowned out in a sea of information. We'll talk a bit about that in a second. So, yes, I'm all for using social media well for the glory of God. Please don't hear me say, get off all social media. That's not what I'm saying. For any individual, it might well be the right thing. But generally, Christians on it as a space to engage is no bad thing if they're engaging well and they're trying to do it for the glory of God. And some people do it brilliantly. And so it's a really great option if we do it well. And part of doing it well is being aware of some of the dangers of those platforms. Let's go into discussion groups. There are two questions. Well, one of them's got two parts, doesn't it? So two and a half. Actually, they've both got two parts. They're also on your handouts. You don't need to look at the screen. So if you flick over to the top of the next page, do you struggle with any of the problems that come from being overinformed? Which in particular? Are there solutions you've found helpful already? Is there anything here you will try to incorporate? Discuss that for 5 minutes or so in your groups. Let's do a little bit of feedback. Maybe particularly if there were any, if anyone had any good ideas in their groups of other things they do to try and kind of combat a world of overinformation. I'm all for us working this out together as a community. So if anyone has got any other top tips, mine are not necessarily the best available. So any thoughts? And there's loads of little threads we can pull out there. There's the kind of knowing yourself well enough to go, I don't need to look at this stuff. That's not going to help me. But I want to be vaguely aware of what's going on in the world, so let's find someone else who I can kind of ask to tell me. And there's the response of going, and the right thing to do about this is to pray. There's a couple of just really helpful threads there. Thank you, Kelly. Anyone else got anything they want to throw into the mix? Yep. Yeah, it's part of that slow down thing. It's find ways to slow yourself down because if it's too quick, it's too easy, you don't really grow. I accidentally missed saying this. One of the things I've done, just to deal with that kind of skim reading issue, I kind of said I print stuff out. I also try really hard to use a physical Bible. That's not me telling you you must. That's not me telling you that next Sunday, anyone who comes in with and uses their phone, I'm going to immediately assume that you're on, you know, Twitter rather than listening or anything like that. But I've found that if I look at a physical Bible, I'm actually more likely to take it in. That's something else I've done. So you might not want to do the same thing. That's fine. Final thing we're going to do. Final thing to value. That's what we're on. So number four on your handouts, third thing to value. Value the transcendent over the trivial. Value the transcendent over the trivial. Philippians chapter 4, famous words. Paul says this. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Let me just say before we get any false assumption about that verse, what that verse is not saying is you must only ever think about God the whole time and nothing else besides God. There are ways in which other things can be true and noble and right and pure and lovely and admirable, anything that's excellent or praiseworthy. So it's okay to watch, I don't know, a video of someone who's really good at guitar, showing you how good they are at guitar, as long as they're not doing it in a way that's, you know what I'm saying. It's okay to enjoy things. It's okay to watch highlights of some incredible football goals, he says to himself. Because in some ways, those things are excellent and praiseworthy. It's okay not to just think about things of the Lord. Be really clear on that. But ultimately, what is always true, always noble, always right, always pure, always lovely, and always admirable, it's Christ in all of his beauty, isn't it? And so what are we to do? We are to value the transcendent, that is the big things, the ultimate things, the things of God, over the trivial, the things that will pass away. Yes, enjoy those things. And Ecclesiastes has told us so many times, enjoy those things. But know those things are trivial. Know that they will pass away. Find ways to value what is ultimate when there is so much that is not ultimate being thrown at us on a daily basis. It is hard to value the transcendent over the trivial when there is so much trivia. Going to end with this. A number of years ago now, two different dystopian novels were produced. So dystopian novels, kind of negative views of the future. I'm now in dangerous territory because I've read neither of them. However, I have read some summaries. So you can work out whether that's me falling foul of the main point of this whole thing. If I get any of this wrong, I'm now very, very shaky ground. George Orwell wrote 1984. And in 1984, George Orwell kind of foresees the future, and he foresees this big brother who's going to censor everything. So all books are going to be censored, they're going to be out, and the truth is going to be kind of concealed and inaccessible to everyone. The problem with the future, says Orwell, is that no one's going to be able to know the truth because the powerful people at the top will stop us from knowing the truth. That's Orwell's dystopian vision of the future. Aldous Huxley wrote Brave New World. And his vision of the future, his kind of fear for the future, is that people are so flooded with information that the truth is drowned out by a sea of irrelevance. It's not that you're not told the truth, it's that you can't even really work out what matters because there's just so much information that you can't really find the true and you can't remember the true. At least in the modern West, which of those do you think has come true? Other parts of the world, Orwell might be more accurate, and there's probably parts of Orwell's vision that's still accurate. But fundamentally, what is the problem in our world? I think Huxley guessed it right. The truth is drowned out in a sea of irrelevance. We absorb so much information that the things that are best, the things that are transcendent, the things that are ultimate, just get drowned out. Let me be realistic for a moment. By 4 o'clock this afternoon, for those on the recording, it's 2:26. By 4 o'clock this afternoon, you will almost certainly, depending quite what you do next, have absorbed, roughly speaking, as much information post-church as you have absorbed at church. And that's only by 4 o'clock this afternoon. Imagine what it's going to be like by 4 p.m. on Wednesday. The truth can be drowned out in a sea of irrelevance. Whatever it is that you go and look at next, and there's nothing wrong with going and looking at other things next, be aware that as we absorb all of that stuff, the transcendent, the beautiful, the ultimate can often just get lost. So find ways to ensure that those things are not lost amidst the sea of the trivial. One way to do that is to pray these things in. So that's what we're going to do. Turn in our groups where we are. Let's spend 5 minutes in prayer, praying in the things of this afternoon that we found helpful. Feel free to pray in the things of this morning if those will be helpful for you to do as well before we then sing to close.